Hey, welcome back to Textual Healing. I'm your host, Mallory Smart, and I am joined today by an enigma of a human being, John Patrick Higgins. But before getting too much into him, I'd like to remind listeners that you can support Textual Healing by following us on Twitter at @podhealing or checking out our website, textualpodcast.com. You can subscribe to us on Spotify, rate us on Apple Podcasts, or even check out our Patreon, which is linked on our Twitter page. Yes, I am still calling it Twitter. That's my hill, and I'm dying on it. Regardless, support us any way you can, and know that I love you for it. Now back to the mystifying, sanguine, and weirdly comical writer, John Patrick Higgins. John has a book coming out from Saggy Meniscus Press called Teeth. I bet you're wondering, is the title a cheeky metaphor, an allusion to something deeper? Nah. It is legit about teeth. John's teeth, to be more specific. And the book is wildly amusing with weird anecdotes, cartoons, and painful descriptions of dental stuff. I only cringe because I just got back from the dentist. But in this episode, we do manage to talk about non-tooth related matters. Not to say that I didn't learn some pretty interesting teeth pop culture trivia. There's one about John Lennon. Listen to find out. But we also talk about John's writing past, what it was like when he was in a band, bands, he's been in a bazillion of them, and somehow keep bringing up seances. Wild, right? Anyways, here's John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, how you doing?
I'm all right. It's midnight here, nearly, so I'm alone and quiet. It's quiet and it's a bit odd. It's quite spooky. And I'm hearing voices from beyond the veil, so there's that. And, you know, I do a lot of podcasts, so this is nothing to me. This is nothing.
Do you usually do a lot of podcasts at, like, midnight for you, or...?
This is more like a seance, really. I have sundered the veil. No, I do podcasts, but normally I do podcasts with people who don't stop talking. So, you know, the prospect of this being an hour long and me talking about myself for an hour is terrifying.
Oh, it's awesome.
Is it?
I just have to say, though, seriously, because you're talking about seances right in front of me, I have a History of Seances book right next to me.
I love seances. So does it have all the... Because they talk about Sunderland, or Summerland. That's what it is. They've rebranded heaven. So it's now called Summerland. There's all sorts of lingo that goes along with it. It's really good stuff. I'm actually thinking of buying a book about this stuff.
I haven't finished it all, but it's like 300 pages. It goes all the way from like the very like root beginnings of seances. Yeah. It was recommended to me by a friend of mine who actually has an occult bookstore, so...
Well, that's really good. So is that like the Knox sisters and that? Because it's kind of an American invention as well.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like... See, I've never understood this. They were cracking their toes, and that's how it sort of worked. But, I mean, I can crack my toes, but not so you can hear them across a room. You know, how are they doing this?
God only knows.
How are you amping
or
up?
The spirits only know.
Well, that's true. That's what it is. Maybe we just, you know.
It's beyond the veil.
It is beyond the veil. Let's keep it beyond the veil. Keep it where it belongs. Where it belongs. Right. So we haven't started, have we? Is this it?
We can start whenever you want.
Oh my god! Like I say, I cannot think of anything to say about myself.
Well, that's okay.
And I've never said anything before.
So, you're in England?
I'm not. I'm in Belfast.
Is that insulting when people like, oh yeah, see, I'm Irish. I know how the Irish are insulted if you think that they're from England.
Yeah, I have a very complicated relationship with where I live because both my parents are Irish, but they moved to England and I betrayed them utterly by moving back to Ireland again. And now I'm here and nobody can understand why or how this has happened. Even my family. I have relatives who live here and they don't really understand why I'm here. It's anomalous.
I mean, do you know why you're there?
No. I can't really afford to move anywhere else. It is cheap. So, and also, they've taken me to their bosoms. So, I have a great deal of gratitude to the Irish people now.
This Irish person is definitely wanting to go to Ireland now and meet you. That sounds awesome.
Have you never been?
No, I haven't, but I have a lot of family back there.
Whereabouts are they? I can't believe we're talking about this.
Oh, come on. I started my last podcast off with tornadoes and cats. Right. So, you know what? Like, anything goes.
Well, I'm gonna give you a guide to Ireland. Where you want to go? Where are they from?
They're County Cork.
Cork? I actually went on holiday to Cork. I've never been before. And it's brilliant down there. So that's an excellent place to go. It is 8 miles away by train from where I live. So if you do go to Cork, it's unlikely you'll bump into me.
Well, I can take the train. We could hang out, talk about seances.
Well, that's true. You know, we can go to some seances.
I will say, do you want to do a seance? That sounds so fun.
Well, you're going to pick up my toe cracking. I'm not sure how effective the microphone on this computer is. But we'll give it a go. Hang on.
Yeah.
Oh, you probably should ask some questions, actually, you know. Otherwise, it's not going to work. We're not going to sunder the veil that way.
See, I haven't had a chance to actually attempt a seance. When I did a reading in Philadelphia where the one friend of mine has the occult bookstore, I was like, we should do a seance. And when I came...
When you say a reading, it wasn't a palm reading.
No, it was like a book reading. And I guess she forgot. We ended up just going to a bar instead.
Well, that was, you know, so you were communing with spirits either way.
Yeah, her more than me. Yeah. I'm not a very heavy drinker.
And you say you're Irish.
Oh, I am the worst Irish person ever. I am constantly reminded of that, so.
Not a red hair on your body. No fighting, no being spanked by John Wayne.
I am very dark-haired. I hate dark beer. I'm not a whiskey drinker. I don't even actually know the difference between whiskey, scotch, and bourbon. So that's probably bad on my end.
Well, I mean, I don't want to get into that. But Scotch, there's a clue in the name. It's like
it's in Scotland. Yeah.
You know, bourbon is American, and whiskey is possibly Japanese. Actually, these days they do very good whiskies.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Japanese whiskey. Just as I've sort of given up drinking, I've suddenly I was going to say I've got a yen for it, but you can't possibly say that. That's ridiculous. But it is very delicious stuff. I can't believe we're talking about this. I should really be talking about my teeth.
Exactly.
But then again, you know, you're probably going to ask me the worst question, which is like, why on earth would you write a book about your teeth?
Well...
And I wish I had an answer.
I was definitely going to go into that, but also maybe a bit more of what is teeth about?
The book just generally?
Yeah, let's go with the book and then we can go generally.
It's literally, see, this is the thing. I should have prepared a statement for this. It's literally the story of how I had really bad teeth. And then I went to a dentist and the dentist made the bad teeth just go away. And also all my money. So I thought, well... I'm doing this. It's cost me a lot of money. There must be some way of getting some of that money back. And I thought, brilliantly, with sort of financial aptitude I'm well known for, I'll write a book about it, the well-known money spinner literature, I'll try and get some money back that way. And I pitched it, and the fools went for it. So my actual first book that I've ever published is about getting my teeth fixed, and I don't really know what to think about that, because I write other things. I don't just write about my teeth or my various body parts. You know, I write other things, and I have a novel coming out at the end of the year. And this was supposed to be sort of an amuse-bouche for that. Here we are talking about a book about my teeth.
And you did all the illustrations?
I did. I didn't do the cover. Everyone thinks I did the cover, but that was by Anne-Marie Hantho. And I said, I said I want someone good to do the cover. And she's done a fabulous job. But the bits inside, the black and white one, the individual teeth drawings, they're all me. Because I'm trained. I'm trained in tooth drawings.
No, they're really good. I think it's very comical, the first few ones.
It is meant to, it's an unusual thing because I don't understand. I get a lot of strange reactions to when I write things that I think are amusing, and people are horrified. So with this, I am slight, because there is a bit of, gum gouging. There's a lot of body horror going on the journey. It's not just high kicking and larks. There is a bit of blood and enamel spitting. But I'm hoping it's not too horrible.
No, I really like it.
You come away from it going, I'm never getting my teeth looked at again. This is it for me.
No, it works out. I actually made a dentist appointment earlier. So
see, I'm giving back. That's what I'm. This is what this book's for. Do not live as I have lived. That's what it's for. That's the moral of the book.
I just like the first illustration. That's like a self-portrait kind of. Yeah.
Is that the clean me one?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's unfortunately what I look like.
I love seeing how people draw themselves because it's like how you see yourself.
Well, to be fair, I am gurning so you can get as much of my teeth in as possible so you could be able to read clean me off my teeth. If I was normally drawing myself, I'd be using the selfie angle, which would be from above, probably from the left, and getting rid of an awful lot of chins and jowls and wattles and all the bits I didn't want anyone to see. But for the purposes of that illustration, I had to go hard and heavy on the ugly and display as much tooth as possible. So you can see up my nose. I mean, it's not pretty. And also my hair looks like a sort of dying aspidistra.
You do have your hair looking quite thin.
Thin?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah, that's what it's looking like in this picture.
You move on to a better picture, then. You can't have that. My hair's that's my crowning glory. It's all downhill from a hairline.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You have, like, some pretty distinct hair. I'm like, he doesn't show himself with a lot of hair in this picture.
It's all I've got going for me. I'm clinging tenaciously to my hair. And now my teeth. I think my first quote there is from James Brown, who talks about if a man has hair and he has teeth, he has it all. And according to James Brown's maxim, I now have it all. Although my hair is real. The teeth are not.
I mean, most of our teeth aren't real, so.
But really? This is news to me. So
I know most people who have implants or all sorts, yeah.
Because I touch on this in the book, because like there is obviously the Simpsons gag of the big book of British smiles. When Lisa's going to the dentist. I say obviously, that joke's probably 20 years old now, no one's seen it. But there is an idea that British
I'm
people...
I'm a Simpsons fan, well, so yeah.
There you go. There is a notion that British people have terrible teeth. And then I uncovered the awkward truth that actually Americans have slightly worse teeth. We both have really bad teeth. But, it's... We don't have worse teeth than Americans. There we go. I just wanted to say that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gag that they keep using in Austin Powers, too.
Yeah, I know. But to be fair, that's the 60s as well, so nobody had good teeth anywhere then.
I'd have to take your word for it, obviously.
Whoa. I wasn't actually around in the 60s.
Okay. But I was going to be like, you don't look like you were.
I have seen
unless you communed with spirits.
You were, yeah. Well, we should probably try and summon up a spirit, the spirit, the zeitgeist even, of Poltergeist of the 60s, and ask him about his teeth. John Lennon gave away one of his teeth. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Well, it was already out. I mean, it wasn't like a generous act. Like someone, please, I need a pop singer's tooth. I'm your woman. I'm your man. He gave it to his housekeeper.
I mean, if he did just randomly pull out a tooth and give it to a fan, that would be even cooler.
It was out, but it was given to not a fan, but his housekeeper, who I imagine if you're John Lennon's housekeeper, you're not going to be a fan. A lot of linen to get through there, all those bed-ins. But she sold it on auction to a Canadian dentist who's planning to clone him from his tooth DNA. So, you see, that's the sort of thing I learned writing about teeth.
That sounds like it's an introduction to a David Cronenberg movie.
Yeah, it's all about the body horror with me, you know.
I mean, I would so love for that to happen.
Also, Cronenberg, great hair. So, you know.
Yeah.
There's a line that's running through this easily.
Great hair and bad teeth. That seems to be the thing we're talking
about. Well, he's clever. He never smiles. You never see that. So he could have anything going on down there. You don't know the crawling morbidities beneath.
So why did you pick a James Brown quote?
I love saying things like that. I was literally thinking... I need to find some quotes about teeth. I need to do something at the front of the book, you know. And I thought, James Brown's got good teeth. Let's see if he talks about his teeth. And he does, because he doesn't let you down. He's the hardest working man in show business. So there, straight away, first quote I found, James Brown, talking about both his hair and his teeth. And as you've wisely touched on, that's my chief areas of inquiry. And my chief interest in life, my own hair and teeth. So, yeah, just the follow-up will probably just be called Hair. And be a stage musical involving copious nudity.
Do you just have a Rolodex in your head of, like, celebrities who have perfect teeth?
No, because that would be every celebrity now. Well, they all have perfect teeth.
That's true.
And I find that, you know, it's rude, isn't it? Just the term. James obviously looked after his teeth. Great.
Towards the end, though, they look pretty damn fake.
Well, I mean, he was... I don't want to say anything libelous about... He is dead, though. You can't libel the dead.
No.
He was doing a lot of drugs, though, wasn't he? You saw that high-speed auto chase. And his hair was askew. Who knows what he's grinding his teeth in those... Like, we can't possibly use any of this, surely. I mean, you must have some editing scissors somewhere.
Oh, I definitely can edit whatever, but this is just way too damn amusing.
Yeah, you know, speculations on James Brown's hair and teeth. That's where I saw this going. And seances. He's the guy. Let's contact James Brown.
God, he would give us so many amazing answers.
Yeah. Get up. Get on up. Stay on the scene, James. It all works. I think he would give us some good answers. But he probably wouldn't appreciate my slovenly posture right now.
I don't know. Okay, what is your slovenly posture?
I'm just leaning forward, like, talking into this laptop. So, you know, he had, you know, West Point sort of posture. He had, he had a stiff back.
I was going to say, I always thought that, like, Americans are known for being more, like, slouchy in everything. And you UK people...
You're saying we're uptight? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, we are, yeah. I got a stick on my ass a mile wide.
Hey, it's if like... it keeps your back up, it's affecting your posture.
I've got a book on my head right now. It's my own book. At last, this dream's come true. So, yeah, I don't know, do we have good posture? Is that a genuine compliment? Yeah.
No, that's a genuine compliment. Wow. I wish I had good British person.
Yeah.
Posture.
Good posture. Any other general ideas about what the English are good at or bad at?
I mean, I like your accents better, obviously.
We do deliver in the accents area. Well, you know, American accents are excellent. You're very good at being cool. I've listened to a few of these, and I am the only one talking quickly who's ever appeared on here.
No, I've actually had a few quick talkers.
Quick talkers.
Yeah.
That's my man.
I definitely like slow them down though, because I'm definitely like more of a pause, think, slow person.
I'm not that. You'll have witnessed me not stopping talking the entire time. It's a real issue.
Are you even tired? Like, do you sleep?
I mean, eventually, but once my posture just goes, and I'll slump into myself bonelessly. I'm good to go for now. Anyway, we've only been going half an hour. This is fine. I've got hours in me yet.
Hours to come.
Hours and hours of this tedious nonsense.
So why did you want to make this book?
I wanted to make a different book. Is the truth of it. I mean, I've written a novel. It's called Fine. It's coming out from Saggy Meniscus Press, who are the same publishers as my publisher. I do like to do well-constructed and thought-through sentences, and that was a beautiful example. And so I pitched that, but it wasn't coming out for 2 years because apparently it takes a while. But I've been going to the dentist and writing down this thing about my teeth. And I just pitched it. Because I knew that Saggy Ministers do a thing called sagging shorts, where they do short books. And this is a short book. And I was advised by one of my friends that they would think it was a great idea, and another that it would be a terrible idea and steal focus from the novel. But I pitched it anyway because I'm a whore.
I think it's a great appetizer.
Do you think? I don't know, because the books, the novel's really, I mean, I say it's really different. I mean, it is a novel. It's not me in it, whereas I'm definitely the main character in this particular book. But then again, I'm worried now that there's not that much difference between the two, the protagonist of the other book and me. They do share, you know, commonalities of voice and tone sometimes.
I mean, that's pretty common with writers, but I mean, would you say it's autofiction?
I'm at pains to make the character markedly different from myself, and yet you're never free of it. It's always there, the controlling impulse to, you know, to say things that are in your head that you've thought, and then you try and frame it in a different way so it's not you saying it, it's the character saying it. But those things drift through. So there are moments in that book where we are in agreement in our opinions, but there are moments when we're massively not in agreement as well. So I don't know. I'd hate to think that it was just a sort of ventriloquist dummy that I was working away at. And, you know, it's don't look at the man behind the curtain. Because I'm telling a story that isn't my story. And I don't want to be involved in it. I don't want to be involved in it in any way. I'm stepping away from that, which is not the same disowning the book, but we're very different people. I should just go with
that's
that.
That's so funny, jumping from this to like something that's totally different from you. Then.
Yeah, I mean, my concern is that people won't see that leap. That they'll just assume that there's two middle-aged men with English accents, and that's the same guy in both. And it's like, no, this is definitely me talking to you now in this book about my actual human teeth. So and now in my head, and my breath is whistling past into your ears. And then there's this other guy who's nothing really like me, but, you know, shares a few nouns with me, I guess. You know,
I guess, like, if he's not going on about his teeth or dentistry and everything.
Yeah. Well, I've swerved that, hopefully. There's very little oral hygiene involved.
It would be hilarious if it was, like, you just go into a long monologue about teeth.
Oh, my God.
In that next book.
I should have ditched that chapter. That's a kicker. I hadn't thought about it before. No, there's no teeth, as far as I'm aware, mentioned in the entire book. So
that's a bummer. Yeah,
no, it's good. I can write about other things apart from teeth.
Yeah, I mean, you think of sometimes, like, celebrities, where they have, like, these weird, like, quirks. Yeah. Like, Brad Pitt has to, like, eat in every single thing he's in, or Tom Hanks is always peeing at some point in every movie he's in. You should just start randomly talking about teeth in everything you write.
Well, I could do that. Well, Tom Cruise is always running everywhere in everything he does, usually with his shirt off. He's got unusual teeth. He's an interesting man. He's got a mono tooth.
He's got, like, a big smile.
He's got, well, apparently, this is apparently true. He has a central tooth, which is not known in nature. He's had his teeth done, so there was a wide central tooth. And I'm not sure that can be true. But he did have very bad teeth when he was a young actor, and he spent money on them. And now they're out in every film. He's showing those bad boys off. So,
oh, God.
Yeah.
I just, like, Googled Tom Cruise's teeth and, yeah, calls it his mono tooth.
Oh, my God. Look, it's like I'm using the correct terminology. I would tell any listeners I'm not actually a dentist. Don't take medical tips from me.
I just never would have noticed that if you didn't say it.
Well, this is the thing. Once you open up the mouth and look in, there's an endless sea of you know, tooth facts available to you. It goes on and on. The dental well. I'm just sitting here just shouting down there, hello, hello. And, you know.
I just want to start Googling celebrities' teeth now.
I'm glad I've inspired you to do this. I mean,
see, that's how I'm
going to
spend the rest of my night.
Let's be doing some sort of podcast here, but fine. No, you go off. You look at the teeth of the rich and famous.
Anybody who told you this is a podcast, now this is just an excuse to talk.
Well, you know, I feel less obliged to be talking about my book now. No, I should be using this as an opportunity to sell my wares. Always be closing. So, you know, but I don't really know how you do that. It's not very British.
You know what's funny?
It's not really British.
I was going to ask you, because I've done it a few times on the show where I've told people, can you pitch me your book without telling me what your book is about? I'm not sure you could do that.
No.
Can
not,
you?
Not without a long run-up, you know, and flashcards.
Just teeth.
Teeth. Like, no, I've got nothing. You'd think I'd have a 5-word pitch or something that I'd just be able to throw out, my elevator pitch, but I've got nothing here.
How did you pitch the publisher?
Well, they have a magazine called The Exacting Clam, which, of course it's called that, which I think I did some drawings for them. And eventually I managed to send them some writing I was doing. Which they seemed to like, which was a surprise. And then, so when it came down to it, I just emailed Jacob, who's the publisher, and said, I don't know, do you fancy, like, it was like going on a date or something. It was weird. Do you fancy, like, publishing a book sometime? I don't know. And he took a really long time to reply. And, I mean, they do. But I was on holiday, and I sort of woke up in a strange room was a hotel, you know, it wasn't a strange room, and got this text on my phone saying he'd read it all. He'd laughed out loud several times at the bits in a public library, and he would love to publish it. And I was like Oliver Twist, waking up in the rich man's house and looking out the window and seeing the world anew, you know, and people coming up and going, cherry ripe, and, you know, who will buy this wonderful moment? So it was like that. And that's pretty much how it happened. It was basically a musical.
That would be... I would love to actually see a musical version of this book, actually. You should actually write some songs about teeth.
I can't think if I've done any song. I mean, I write a lot of songs, but I don't know if I've written any about teeth. Although I was once in a band called Mouth. There you go.
Ooh, connection.
There you go, you see. Band. I was in a band way back in the day called God's Rubber Teeth. As well.
I'm noticing a trend.
Yeah, well, I hadn't noticed that trend because I actually wrote down ahead of this all the bands I've been in. Because I've been in millions of bands.
How many, okay, you're going to have to go, run me down the names and genres.
Well, I've just remembered two more, so that's good. So I'll give you them from the top. I think there's about 20. And the amazing thing is you've never heard of any of them. It's not that amazing. So, but I'd started out when I was about 15. So my first band, it was the 80s, was called... I can't actually bear to say this. This is so horrible. we were called... we called Resonance and Gabriel. Just... I can't even imagine how that happened. I'll give you that again. Resonance and Gabriel is the name of the band. That was followed by, with perfect sort of... rather perfectly, we were called the Franks after that. Then Still. So we're moving it down to one syllable now. Then we became the Casino Souls. Then Petermane, but that was a big shift. So the first ones had been like indie bands. Petermane was an electropop duo. And then we moved on to Big Marker, and then The Woods, then Nude Scientists, then Knock Knock. Then I moved to London at that point. Are you still there?
I'm still here. Because, I'm just fascinated by these names.
This is crushingly dull, but, you know, we will get to we will get through this. So then I moved to London, and I started, because all those other ones have been, synthesizer two pieces or hobby bands or things you just do at a weekend. But then we moved to London, and I joined a band called Red Atlas, who were a proper rock and roll band who actually played gigs and went out and did all this stuff. And that was followed by my Sensitive Acoustic two-piece called Club of Queer Trades. Then it was the Charlemagne's.
That's a big shift.
It's a slight shift. Then the Charlemagne's, then Blasted Heath, and my current band, yes, it's still happening, is called Ebbing House.
What kind of music do you play for that?
That one is horrible music. We're post-rock, I guess you'd call it, post-rock. It's a lot of reverb.
It's pretty popular these days.
Very, very deep vocals. I'm doing a lot of deeper vocals now. I did a lot of falsetto earlier on, but it's getting pretty treacly now, the vocal. But my diction has got better, so that's good. You know, I started off...
Is any of this on, Spotify?
You can get it on Bandcamp if you look on there. I don't actually sing in the Charlemagne's. I just write the songs for the Charlemagne's, and they're all over the place because they're actually a proper band who gig all over London and Wales for some reason. But Ebbing House got 3 EPs out now. You can get them all over the band camps. They should be on Spotify. I'm not sure they are, but they should be.
So...
yeah, don't write this down and don't find them. Don't do this live, certainly.
Oh, I'm just taking a look.
Believe me, John, I'll never look again. This is it. This is the one time I'll be looking.
Just, yeah, taking a peek, that's all.
Yeah. Can you see them?
Looking.
Yeah. Do you want me to spell Ebbing House for you? It's 2 words. It's 2 words.
Ebbing House, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I got you. I got you guys.
Oh, God. Oh, this is worse when they took the caps off my front teeth. Oh, man.
How does that feel, actually? Like, I imagine it's almost freeing feeling.
Oh, no. It's the opposite of that. Freeing? Oh, it's literally, it was my worst fear ever. For me, I haven't smiled in a photograph. I mean, I've looked like Chuck D in every fucking photograph I've ever done because nobody could ever see my teeth. And they weren't even bad when I first started doing this, but they were bad enough. By the end, I didn't even know how bad it was. And then they made me come in on the first day with the dentist and take forensic photographs of me smiling. And it's literally like I had to stand. It's like one of those dreams where you're naked in front of the class at school. I never felt so denuded in my life. I'd been naked and it had been better than this. You know, this was, you know, as long as they're not looking at my teeth, I'm fine with it. So, and then he showed me on a light box what my teeth looked like. And I almost cried. In fact, I think I may have welled up in the room. It was because I had no idea how bad they were. It was just gruesome. So, and I still had my cap teeth at the front, so they were doing all the work. Mm-hmm. But if anyone saw my teeth at all, those big four, the big four at the front, were doing all the work. And then the temerity of the man to come and suggest he might take those off just to see what was underneath was horrific. But I mean, and no, it's the modern world. They shouldn't be using like chisels and the jets of water and stuff. It's, you know, they're just, it doesn't feel modern. There should be like, you know, things that don't hurt or don't choke you, and they're using medieval instruments of torture. You know, I think like a sort of spiky pear may have been introduced into my anus at one point. It felt like that. You know, it was brutal. So, to answer your question, yeah, no, it wasn't very freeing. I didn't feel liberated at all. I felt violated.
I mean, Mallory. I'm gonna take like a weird leap though. I bet you've never had laser surgery on your teeth.
Not on my teeth. Have you had laser surgery on your teeth?
Yeah, I had to have a laser surgery. Oh my god!
What? What? To do what?
I actually have a fake front tooth because I ran into a pole when I was a little kid. I have no issues admitting that. But as I got older, you know, they had to eventually be like, "We're just gonna have to go in and like, there's like a screw that they had to like put in my jaw and everything and." Yeah, lasers were involved. Very fun stuff.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hang on. You ran into a pole and they had to put a screw in your jaw.
Yeah.
What part of your head did you hit there? What tooth came out?
Front tooth. And I kind of like cracked my jaw a little bit. I was running pretty fast, I guess I could say.
It was freeing.
It was very freeing.
The wind in my hair, the screw in my jaw.
Now my jaw like clicks constantly, but what are you gonna do?
Oh my god. When I got to the dentist chair, first of all, he went, "Oh, your jaw's become misaligned because of your teeth." And I was like, okay, I'm fine with that. And then he just grabbed my head and went, and he was right. It changed shape. He changed the shape of my head within about 5 minutes of meeting him. So if you thought this was a bad meeting, I mean, this guy. But
that sounds like
I couldn't believe it.
What a chiropractor would do almost, but to your jaw instead. Wow.
Or an all-in wrestler, possibly, you know.
You know,
I don't know. Usually with their thighs, but still.
I have a weird thing where I'd like to hear cracking sounds, so I would actually love to hear what that would sound like.
You're back to the Knox sisters again, and they're cracking toenails.
Yeah, but no, I want to hear the crack of the jaw. That'd just be, it sounds more satisfying.
We're back to the seance. I'd like to see if I can do it, but I'm not going to do that, because if I do dislocate my jaw, that's a lot of dead air. You're going to have to do a lot of covering.
I was going to say, who's going to talk now?
Yeah.
So how is it like you're a musician and a writer? Because those are two interesting vibes. Like, when did you decide to become a writer?
After I stopped trying to be an illustrator, really. So
you're like the trifecta there. Musician.
Well, you know, I'm a triple threat, I tell you. You should see me dance. I don't know. I always wanted to be... I was always good at drawing. And I was fiercely unimaginative. So I just never thought of doing anything else because I just happened to be good at it. And so I let myself be guided by this notion that, I'll probably just end up being a painter or something, or like that's a job, or something. But I got into doing cartoon strips when I was very young. And you have to have something in the speech bubbles, otherwise it's just a lot of men in tights hitting each other. So I started to write the stories then. And then I realised that it wasn't cool. This was a long time ago when comics were not cool. Obviously, everything's cool now. But then I decided, screw this, I'll join a band because that's popular and girls will like it. And I did that, and it was popular and girls did like it. So for then, that was a good move. But I stopped writing and stopped drawing for a long time. And then when it was clear that I wasn't going to make it as a pop star, I got a proper job and didn't do anything creative at all for about 15 years. And off the back of that, I sort of started to write properly for the first time, really. And then I moved to Belfast, and I didn't know anybody. I had no money and no job. So I thought, I know. I'll go out and I'll review the arts. And I got into a sort of weird ghetto on the local newspaper of reviewing theatre. And I thought, I'm seeing a lot of really bad theatre. I can do that. I can make bad theatre. It can't be worse than this. The level of hubris was still high. And so I started writing plays. And one of my plays ended up going to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and then was picked up by a local theatre company, and it toured all over and it got very good reviews. And then I just started doing everything. I just started trying to write everything. So I'm doing films and I'm doing plays and I'm doing books and I'm loving life.
How do you keep it all together?
That's a long answer. That was a long answer. I'm sorry about that.
No, there's no such thing as long answers.
Au contraire. Too long. That's too much. I'm fettered Higgins coming at you. Nobody wants that. But yeah, it's great. although, you know, it's quite annoying being this old and doing it.
Well, why?
To suddenly find yourself ambitious at this age is annoying. Well, because I wanted my book jacket photo to look cool.
Well, nobody has to know what you really look like. You could find, like, a really cool young picture of yourself. I'm sure you have some badass band pictures.
Like Brian Ferry, still using the same one from the 80s. Come on, Brian. You're 75, mate. Give it up. You've heard me, right? I betray myself utterly all the time. There's no way I couldn't just go out and go, and this is me. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, I've got a friend who writes under an alias and is very mysterious. But he is a mysterious guy. And I I've just literally written a book about my own teeth. That's the level of mystery you get with me. There's very little hidden away. So I sent a series of pictures of myself to my publisher, and obviously he picked the worst one. So that's going on the back of the book. So
yeah, that happened with my last book too.
Why do they hate us, Mallory? You'd think they'd want to sell the books.
Yeah, they always pick the one where it's like, oh, shit, I guess I should never have sent that one.
Is it punishment?
It becomes our own fault, because, like, if you didn't want it, then why'd you send it?
This is your problem. You've done this to yourself. Why are you hitting yourself? Oh, it is like they've got you pinned to the ground, and they're putting... You know, they grab your arms by the wrist and they're punching you in the face with your own fists and going, ooh, why are you hitting yourself? Ooh, what do you want to do that for? And I'm going, oh, it's you hitting me with my own fists. Or with the photographs I've already sent you. I sent them some lovely photographs of me looking moody and interesting. And, hopefully you'll see the abomination they're actually going to go with. Wow. I mean, I think I might have... I think I was recovering from flu.
The one picture I sent is me. I was, like, post-COVID. Like, I had just gotten better.
Right.
Yeah. They love taking those pictures, being like, that looks fine. So right now, anytime anyone asks, like, for an author picture, I just find, like, the hottest picture I could find. Be like, here, this is me. Just please... forget the other picture.
Yeah, well, like I said, the hottest picture I find would be from 20 years ago, you know. So I can't rock a roll neck anymore. You know, they won't let me smoke indoors, you know. And black coffee stains my teeth. So you're stuck with what I've got now. You've seen the illustrations. It's not far from that.
I've seen what you look like from your website and also from...
What? That's creepy.
What do you think do before podcast? Research you. It's my job.
Oh my god, I feel violated again. This is, you know, it's like you're taking the caps off my teeth. I don't know what's out there.
Oh, believe me, I have the same issue though too, where you're like, damn it, where'd you get that picture? But it's fun.
Well, yeah. I did a thing for a local paper once, and they took something off Facebook, and I was like, that's not meant for, you can't do that, you know. But nobody cares. They've got no scruples anymore. They'll use anything.
Yeah, basically. It's one of those, like, you know, just look you up and then it's like, oh yeah, that's them. I like that picture.
Yeah. It's my fault for whorishly allowing my images to be out in the ether. And, you know, they're right. I'm to blame.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You're completely.
Why do we do it to ourselves?
You know,
we must be fools.
You're selling yourself out. You know, you're pimping your own image out.
Well, I mean, yeah, I am. This is what we're doing now. So, you know, I live to pimp.
For someone who just wrote a book about your teeth, then yeah.
Yeah.
You're inviting people in, quite literally.
Come into my mouth. All takers, come on, let's do this. Look at my feelings, see my degradation. It is, yeah, it's an odd thing to do, actually, now I think about it. I don't know if I've even thought it through. I've not really thought through the implications of writing a book about oral surgery. Why would anyone do that? I mean, I'm writing a sequel and it's about my bad back. So, you know, we'll see.
You're really showing
We'll see if this warrants a sequel.
You're definitely showing your age.
Hey, what are you saying?
Bad back, all your teeth.
I know, I'll tell about it. Oh, you wouldn't believe it. I'm on to three pairs of glasses now.
Well, I've had vision issues.
This isn't very rock and roll, is it? You know, in the old days, it would have been snake hip dancing in leather trousers. And now, I'm talking about my teeth and the amount of glasses I need to just get through the day. Like, where are my eating glasses?
Were you ever punk as fuck, or?
I miss punk. I mean, there were punks around when I was young, but we mocked them because they were like teddy boys hanging around since the 50s. So I don't know. It would be hard. I was watching a documentary on Postcard Records the other day, and realised they still dress like a Scottish musician from 1981. They all dress the same as me, but I was never there. And they're all about 10 years older than me anyway. But that just seems to be the way it's worked out. So that's my style. I'm commonly copping. It's an elderly Scottish musician. Not like a bagpipe musician or something.
Oh, no, I vibe it, yeah.
Like that. There's no kilts. That would be quite an affectation.
That would be very humorous.
Well, yeah. Well, I'll tell you about my knees in the next book. Then you'll find out. There'll be an ill wind blowing there. But, I'm sounding quite old here. It's not good.
Well, tell me something crazy you did in one of your bands. Bring up... Just tell me a fucked up band story. We'll bring you right back down.
I can't think of any. We were very well-mannered fans.
No shenanigans?
It's not... You know, you're out of the Gigi Allen shit, and it's not going to happen. I don't know. I'm not primed for that story. Let me think. I'll do a sort of lengthy monologue about seances, and I'll come back with something great. But I don't know. I can't think of anything really off the back of my. We were very polite. You could take us anywhere. You know.
So let down of an answer.
I know. God, I can't believe it. I should have made something up.
Make something up. You're a writer.
Right. Okay. So. We were in Germany in the back of a van with a goat and the local high priestess of a satanic cult, right? And I was drinking myrrh. I don't know if you can drink myrrh. I was freebasing myrrh now. I can't believe I'm doing this.
This is fantastic.
You're going to record this. This is great stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so while she was tattooing my back with an effigy of Baphomet, I was actually just relaxing. I was having a foot massage, actually. It was very, very, because I've been wearing my hush puppies all day and they had been pinching at the toes. So, in the end, it was quite pleasant. And I passed out.
See, now that's a band story.
That's not even a band story. Who wears hush puppies in a band?
The weirdly stupid
penny loafers. I got a hole in my cardigan.
You mentioned, like, tattooing and everything. Do you have any tattoos?
No, I don't. And I don't approve of it.
Really?
Well, I can't think of anything to put on me that I genuinely want there forever to look at.
I just if you're in a band at some point, someone in the band is going to be like, I'm going to go get a tattoo and like probably drag you around to go with them. No,
I mean, I'm loving this idea that you think of as a sort of youthful Johnny Thunders or something. That I was just, yeah, I'll be in on that. Yeah, cool. Like I'm Billy Idol. It wasn't that sort of thing at all, you know. We were reading library books in the transit van, you know, and there was Horlicks in our flasks, you know. I was darning my socks nightly, Yeah, there's none of this. It wasn't girls, girls, girls. The song or the video, it was nothing like that.
Sounds so wholesome.
We didn't really have a strip to go up and down them in Basingstoke. I don't know. Maybe bands are different in America. They're very wholesome in England. It's a lot of tea drinking.
Really?
Yeah, we like to go and visit stately homes, things like that. yeah.
So, like you say,
collect
like
bookmarks
gigging around. Like, are you just like in like the main city that you're like living in? You're just hitting up like gigs in that area, or do you like travel around the country?
Well, now or then, because I didn't do any gigs at all now. Then we would travel. I was in a small town called Basingstoke, which is in Hampshire, which sounds like something from the Shire and is. And it's quite a rural. It's literally, it's like a worm cast made of cement that's been shunted onto some of the most beautiful landscape in England. So where I lived wasn't particularly beautiful, but you go 5 miles in any direction out of the town and you'd be into some serious green, luscious, verdant beauty. So it was weirdly towny but also country sort of thing. So you'd be playing in pubs mainly, local pubs around the area. Occasionally we'd do little tours and we'd go off in vans and we, you know, you'd venture into something that was approaching a city. But mainly it was little towns with little venues and little use for the sort of music we were doing. So, you know, it was mildly rock and roll. It was comfortable rock and roll. And that suited a lot of the music that was coming around then, because there was a lot of very non-rock. There was a real anti-rockist vibe. So, you know, we were all watching Motley Crue videos on MTV and going, we don't want any part of that. We will wear anoraks. We will wear sensible shoes. We will grow our fringes so long we can't see our library books. It was that sort of vibe. Lots of striped T-shirts, lots of badges, lots of satchels. I feel like I'm letting you down, Mallory.
Oh, no, I'm just envisioning it all. This is like such a perfect portrait you're painting.
Is it a beautiful new world? Is it a fascinating vista?
It is. I'm wishing that like I could see some like cool photos now.
I think, luckily, I come from a point that's pre-internet.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And pre-phone.
It's annoying.
So I think I've just about got away with it. But there are some priceless ones out there somewhere. I'm sure eventually I'll be, you know, betrayed by somebody. But
yeah, like no one would be like taking pictures of you like doing shows or gigs or whatever because nobody had like phones filming it.
No.
Being annoying.
I know, and people with cameras would lose their cameras very quickly. It was a different age, but I don't know. It's good. I used to enjoy the difficulty of it all. Recording anything was very hard, and it's you know all those moments. I don't feel the nostalgia for them really. I'm glad they're gone, in a way.
Really?
I mean, I still have demos. We recorded demo tapes and things like that, and they're some of the funniest things you'll ever hear in your entire life.
I mean, that's the best thing ever, is to look back at like the weird stuff you did when you're younger and be like, oh god, that was me.
Yeah, I like the idea that there's a rarity value to it, though. I mean, I like to look back on the things that I actually have, and I'm very glad there's not just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things, you know, because you do stupid things, and you know, there's only so many pictures of you covered in vomit, you know, that the world needs to see.
See, now that's
or someone else's vomit, you know. Sorry,
that's rock and roll right there.
It is rock and roll. There was a lot of rock and roll. I'm soft soaping it slightly to protect basically myself, but you know, I'm very glad that my generation got away with it.
What generation do you see yourself as?
I'm avowedly Gen X, if that's a thing, still.
No, yeah.
Though, I mean, you know, nobody even sees that, you know. Anyone over the age of 25 now is a boomer as far as young people are concerned. But we're very different people.
Oh, yeah, you are very different people.
We have nothing.
The thing about Gen X is we're like, we like your music, but we don't give a fuck about you.
Yeah. Cheers, guys. But it's true, I think, you know. Well, it's, you know, a shame. But we didn't do much, did we? Mm-hmm. You know?
As I said, music. We were
like a placeholder generation. Sort of waiting for people to realise, hey, the boomers have fucked everything. And we didn't notice. We were too busy sneering at them and saying they had funny trousers. You know?
Yeah, and from my understanding, Gen X doesn't like millennials that much either, so...
I'm fine with everybody.
Well, you're one of the few.
Why? What are Gen X not supposed to like about millennials?
I don't know. Nobody seems to like millennials. We're the most hated generation, I think.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, it's between us and the boomers, quite honestly. It's really weird.
Yeah, I think the boomers edge it.
They do.
I mean, you know, you're kind of pathetic because you have nothing. And they're all so rich.
Yeah, and they won't leave their jobs.
They won't leave anything. They won't even leave the planet, which really they should do.
Back in like 2016 with politics, I was like, don't worry, they're all going to die out soon. Haven't, no.
Why won't they die?
It really is.
I mean, I'm old, and I'm a whole generation under them.
You just keep waiting.
They need to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. They're sticking around.
Yeah, sticking around, they're holding on to everything.
For them, which is strange, I, you know. Wow.
I mean, who else are you going to vote for, though?
Just 80-year-old man.
Like, here is an 80-year-old man. Yeah, here is a 78-year-old man.
I can see through your hair. How are you the best guy for this? Mind you, lovely teeth.
Now I'm just thinking of Joe Biden's teeth. What the fuck?
Yeah.
See. That's the issue with this conversation is now I'm just going to start like keep going back to like teeth, random teeth I've seen.
That's my plan. This is why I'm playing a long game. You know, you need this. I'm always bringing it back. Always be closing here. You know, back to the teeth. But I mean, really, you look at Biden. It is like a windfall apple that someone has pushed a denture into. It's like, you know, those teeth are going to outlive him.
Oh, they definitely will.
You know, mind you, mine will probably, so, you know, fingers crossed.
See, but your whole generation younger, actually, I think a little bit more. I think he's almost close to silent gen.
Yeah, I'm a little bit younger than Joe Biden. Wow. I think probably maybe two generations younger than Joe. Now, he is incredibly old, but still, wow, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you got a while.
I'm still viable. I can still move.
And that's
in
why
theory.
You should, you know.
I don't want to test that theory, but it's possible.
Be rock and roll and shit, too.
Yeah.
You could do it.
You're right. I'm going to go back on the road, man. I'm going to get the band back together.
And you're going to sing exclusively about teeth, though, right?
So I did come up with some teeth covers, but I can't remember what they are now. So that's a really good bit. Let's lose that bit. I think Steely Dan had a tooth-related song.
When writing this, did you like just start randomly looking up like teeth related shit? Just like.
Yeah, there's a whole chapter on it. I mean, I've got the patron saint of teeth in there, you know? I love the patron saint of teeth, Saint Apollonia. Obviously, because of the cruel irony of the old church, she had her teeth removed. That's how you used to do it in those days. You know? What's the most famous thing about you? They took all my teeth out. Patron saint of dentists, right there. That's how they did it. Isn't it Saint Lucy who's the patron saint of light? What does light need, patron saint? Got one. She had her eyes removed. That's how they used to do it. Apollonia didn't even die from having her teeth removed, because you don't. She jumped into a fire, but they thought that was boring. So they just said, dentist, you're dentist. But there's loads and loads of tooth stuff out there. I loved going into the tooth stuff.
What is, like, the craziest tooth-related pop trivia that you know, other than patron saint?
You're doing that thing where you put me on the spot and I haven't got a prepared answer, now I hate you.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought John Lennon giving his...
That was a good one.
Yeah, giving his, like, cleaner, his tooth. What a dick. Here.
It's a pretty good story.
That's a lovely gift for you. Sorry it's not beautifully wrapped. I've got to think of another good tooth thing. But, I mean, I'm blanking now. Thank you. I'll tell you... you won't remember this because, I mean, you're too young. Do you remember Jaws? Not the film with the shark, but Jaws with the metal teeth out of James Bond.
No.
Well, okay. In two James Bond films, you've heard of James Bond, right? Yeah.
Yes.
We've had a conversation about Austin Powers, so we're in that area. Just trying to get old and patronising. It's lovely, isn't it? So, well, I'm now telling you a story about a man you've never heard of in a film you haven't seen. So buckle up. This is gold. In two James Bond films, there's a character called Jaws, who's played by Richard Keel, who's a very tall man and used to portray aliens in the Twilight Zone quite a lot. And he has metal teeth. And there's a famous scene where he has to bite through the cables of a cable car, which are made of steel. But in real life, in the film, because films are lies, the cables were made of big blocks of licorice. There you go. That's a brilliant tooth fact.
Wow. That is a very fun tooth fact. See,
and
you've got
it. I sold another 10 books just off the back. Look at that. That is the magic.
You should just, like, go on a corner and just be like, ask me anything about teeth, and
here's
then throw
one you haven't heard about Richard Keel. You know.
That'd be great. That's a perfect sales opportunity right there.
Did you know when you're born, your teeth sort of live under your eyes?
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah, an x-ray of a baby will show you that they've got extra teeth just secreted about their skulls. Because they're waiting there just to slot into place. Because you get all your teeth. They're all in there already. You don't grow new ones when you lose your baby teeth. They're all in there. So I've seen photographs of babies with their teeth just poised to get into place. So that's a nice thing to see.
That sounds like very horrific. Wow.
Well, it is very horrific, but you wanted rock and roll, and I'm giving you baby scars with extra teeth. Come on.
That is very rock and roll. Scary, yeah. Rock and roll. I dig it.
That's a Motorhead logo right there.
Really?
I should stick an umlaut on it. But there you go. So,
You know, a great way to sell this, just start, like, putting your book outside of dentist's offices.
Well, I'm gonna give it to the dentist who's in the book.
Ooh. That's
and
good.
Go, what do you think of your portrayal in this? And don't sue me. But he comes out of it pretty well, I think, because they have stayed in, and we get on very well. And he was the only one who cared about my film career.
Aww.
You know, I've got terrible friends. So when I go to them, going, oh, my poor film career, they were going, oh, I don't care about your film career. You shouldn't even have a film career. You live in Belfast. What are you doing? But I should tell you that Disney paid for my teeth.
Feels like there's a story there. Go on.
Well, but you were supposed to come in and go, oh, tell me more.
Tell me more.
And it was just a really long gap there. And I thought, I keep thinking the feed's gone here.
Oh, no, you're good.
Dirty feed. I'll go again. So I should tell you that Disney paid for my teeth.
Oh, tell me more.
Oh, this is, now we're cooking. So I wrote a film for Disney. And through a very unusual series of events, which I won't get into here. But I wrote this film, and they paid me some proper money, and it's like the most money I've ever had for writing anything. And I suddenly had it, and I went, well, what should I do with this? And that's why I decided to get my teeth done, because I suddenly could afford to get my teeth done. And they never made the film, obviously, because... but they did pay me for... You know, I was contractually obliged to give them four different scripts, and they paid me. Good luck to them. But they... yeah, it was brilliant. They closed down the studio that was going to make it literally the day we gave it to the company. So... But it's still viable. Could still get made. I'm very confident. It wasn't about teeth. But yeah, we can overlook. I can put teeth in. I'm an expert now.
Yeah. And as you know what? If the movie happened, you would be way too cool for this podcast. So slightly
well,
happy
you
it
say
didn't.
That. Listening back, I think you won't find yourself confronted with too much coolness. You know.
No, I think, like, once you get some success or something, you suddenly be like, I am a badass. I am above everybody. Or is that not a British thing?
What, being a badass?
Like, just, like, getting overinflated on, like, your success.
You know, we have horrifying narcissists here as well, don't worry.
Okay.
We're chock-a-block with them. I would say as well, I was doing Zoom calls with, like, the producers and stuff from Disney, and that was another gentle prod in the area of, hey, maybe you need to get your teeth fixed. Because I was dealing with people who were like 20 years younger than me, and they had the sort of oral furniture that would blind you. That would take... That, it was like, you know, like white goods being in the room with you when I was looking at them. They're flashing these things around, and it's like somebody's opened a fridge. So I thought, well, that... I can't seriously... go to a pitch meeting and open these barely fit for purpose elderly banana teeth. So, but then I've not been back to Hollywood since then. So, you know, it was a complete waste of time and money, Mallory. What was I thinking?
Are you at least like walking around everywhere, like giving the biggest smile as much as you can? Or is that not British?
That's very not British, but I'm doing it anyway because I paid for them now.
I'm going to be like, get your money's worth.
Yeah, and, which again is not British, you know? Yeah, I've got loads of lovely teeth. Well, no, I say that. It's all changed. Reality TV has come in, and now everybody in Britain has beautiful teeth, and they're all rampant, hairless narcissists screaming for attention. And, you know, in many ways... You'll never see the demure rock bands of yore again, sitting in our cardigans waiting to go on with our one pint of beer between four of us, and it's, thank you very much, we appreciate this. Now everybody just wants attention all the time, and they're all, you know, terrifying. And really good at being on, I mean, you know, they'd be good at this. They'd be good at coming on here and giving you, like, neatly pearled sound bites, and they'd know they'd have when you go, hey, have you got another brilliant tooth story, John? They go like that, straight on it. Here's another brilliant tooth story. Whereas I'm going, have I done the John Lennon one? I have some millions in the book. I wish I had one to hand. So I don't know. The sort of Hugh Grant era is over.
Wow, whatever happened to him? Wow.
I think he's still out there. He's doing good work. He was in Paddington 2. Did you see Paddington 2?
Wasn't he just in the new Willy Wonka?
He was in Wonka.
Movie? Yeah.
Yeah, he was the Oompa Loompa.
Oh, wow. I have to see that.
I haven't seen it. I hear it's great.
I'm just imagining him as an Oompa Loompa.
I think he's a very dry Oompa Loompa.
He is British.
Yeah, he's gonna have that dry wit that you're not gonna be able to know if he's actually joking or not.
Well, I'm gonna see that this weekend then. I'm gonna see that and Dune. Get my Timothy Chalamet in.
Yeah, well, that's a double bill, the Chalamet.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. That's probably all in the cinema, something. A Chalamet multiplex.
Yeah.
Entirely devoted to his cinematic work. I don't think I've ever seen him in any film.
Really?
I've heard the name.
Wow. You have to watch some Timothy Chalamet. I've seen the cheap bones.
What's he been in? I mean, he'd been in the first Dune as well, I imagine.
There's just so many. He's actually been doing a lot of work.
A lot of work. He is a lot of work. That's what I hear. Well, that's the word on the street.
He's dating one of the Jenners, so he's done good.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, I think he's dating the youngest one.
Right. I don't know. So not even a Kardashian. Is this like... This is like the Falcon Crest of Kardashians.
Well, ironically, I think she's the richest one.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I think she's a billionaire.
I've not seen those either.
Yeah.
I've not seen the Kardashians or I'm amazed I know who you're talking about, actually.
Yeah, I'd be like, hey, are the Kardashians like a worldwide thing? Or is it just us weird Americans who are just like,
no, wow, everybody knows about them. I mean, I'm amazed I know about them. And yet, here we are. Apparently, we've come from a seance and the Knox sisters to the Kardashians and a Jenner, who's a billionaire.
Yeah.
Who probably does, like, tweets about, you should all work harder.
Oh, they love saying shit
like
that.
Look at me. Yeah, look at me. Look where I am. It's because I work so hard.
I wasn't born into the money at all. No.
I don't know. Maybe they work really hard.
I mean, I have seen, like, the behind the scenes of the reality show. It's like, okay, they are actually working somewhat, but, yeah.
Are they, though?
Well, they're not actually shooting reality. They have to fake reality, which is weird.
Scripted reality, they call it, which is just a baffling concept. But, you know, puts honest writers out of work, so I'm all for it. Dishonest writers, though. I love them. The whole thing I find baffling and hideous, and I want no part of.
You would never help write a reality show.
What is that, money?
Probably.
Well, yeah, probably then. Yeah.
I'm say I'm not, you know, above I'm not, writing.
I'm not fixed to these values. If there's money involved, I'm not at a level of my career where I can turn things down, especially if they're easy money.
I imagine that would be easy money. Be like, excuse me, just come up with a few random things for Kim Kardashian to say.
I don't know. Then you'd have to deal with Kim Kardashian, surely.
Yeah. No.
That's where
a
you
lonely
were.
A writer? No.
Yeah. Well, Matt, you're right. She'd just come up and put some gum in your coffee and move on again.
I would be fine if I was being paid for that to happen.
You should look into this. I see big things in your future.
Very big things in my future.
Look at you scripting reality. Isn't it what every writer dreams of anyway?
Honestly, I think most writers these days are fine with, like, whatever.
Yeah. Well, we're desperate people.
We are.
We will do it. We will, you know, we will dance in our blue pants for coin. And, you know, we don't care. I've just written about my rotten teeth.
I am willing to, like, sit in a park and be like, I will write poetry for money.
Oh, my God. I actually saw someone do that. I was in London.
Oh, my God. Is that a thing?
Yeah. Somebody with a typewriter sat down and said, I will write you a poem for £5. $5. Literally was happening outside the South Bank.
Well, that just sounds like they stole my idea.
In advance.
In advance.
The sneakiest bastards of all.
That's so, wow. They stole the idea right out of my head. And
well, there you go. Well, you can import it. You know, I've only seen one instance of that happening, and that was in London, and that guy's probably dead now. So it's yours. My gift to you.
Exactly. I'm just going to grab my typewriter, run to the park, and just see if anyone comes up to me.
Oh, my God. Do you have a typewriter?
Yeah, I have two.
Oh, my God. Really?
You're talking to a writer here.
Yeah, I don't need no electricity when I'm typing.
I actually fucking hate using them. It's more for, like, the kitschiness, but...
All right.
Well, all right. One I could use. The other one, it literally is, like, the single finger, like, click, 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 click sound, because it's from, like, the 40s.
So it's really heavy.
Oh, yeah. It's a, I mean, an Underwood.
It's like a murder weapon.
Oh, I could kill you with both of them, yeah. Actually. I mean, if you would like me to murder you with my typewriter, I'm sure I can bludgeon you to death.
You can say that, but like it sounds like I could kill you with both of them, but I'd have to work a bit harder with one of them.
Exactly.
You know, I'd have to be more imaginative with the smaller, lighter model.
Like, yeah, I would just have to take a few more hits, and I would have to decide on the angle with the one.
I mean, it sounds like we're working on a script for Murder, She Wrote now. This Jessica Fletcher will be all over this.
I feel like we've come up with so many random ideas in this episode.
This has been a fruitful conversation. I'm going to come away from this going, do I own this? Do I own these brilliant ideas?
And I say yes, and make a lot of good content based off of all the weird ideas. If you come off of this and start writing an idea of someone murdering you with an Underwood typewriter, good on you.
Oh, it's an Underwood.
Yeah.
Oh, that's classy. Oh.
Heavy, too.
Yeah, I can imagine. I couldn't lift that nowadays, you see. Mm. See, I don't shift the amps anymore, so, you know, all those back-breaking muscles have gone. I never shifted amps. I was the singer. That was somebody else's job.
I was going to ask what, like, position you were in the bands.
Oh, come on. There's nothing else it could have been.
Well, I don't know. I'm trying to imagine you playing guitar, but see, I can't imagine it because I don't know what younger you look like.
Well, it wasn't bad, I have to say. Yeah, I mean, I did go through a period of people not just handing me guitars and expecting me to know how to play them, so I looked like I could play guitar.
See, there you go, then. You got
the vibe. But then they'd be always disappointed, so I started running away so I didn't disappoint people. But I was always the singer.
See, that's where punk rock
and the lyricist and the writer, obviously. But, you know, I wasn't half bad, Mallory.
I can't wait to listen to some of your music on Bandcamp after this.
Yeah, it'll be cleansing.
It'll be very cleansing.
It's basically an emetic.
So, before we go, is there anything else you'd love to add?
Hang on, are we finished? How is that possible?
I know.
Have I even talked about anything?
We talked about everything.
Yeah, apart from my books. I don't know. So this book's coming out, I guess, on April 15th. It's from those kind people at Sagging Meniscus Press. I have my novel, which is called Fine. And that's coming out in November from the nice people at Sagging Meniscus Press. That name again, Sagging Meniscus Press. And yeah, please, you know, buy them.
Yeah.
And I'll make that vanity record that everybody wants me to make.
Do it, yes.
Yeah. Well, if the money starts rolling in, I've got no more excuses. I'm booking studio time.
Yeah. If Disney could pay for you to get teeth, then this should be able to pay for you to do a record.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, that was John Patrick Higgins. Check out his book, Teeth, from Sagging Meniscus Press. It comes out April 15th. You can probably find it just about anywhere books are sold, but I always recommend people buy from the publisher, more supportive that way. No judgments on the Amazon junkies out there. I get it. You can check out John's blog, johnhigginsblogspot.com, or stalk him on Twitter at johnnymuggins. Be sure to check out the show notes for all the proper spellings and links. As always, please check out our Twitter at podhealing and take a look at our website, textualpodcast.com. Show us support by going onto Apple Podcasts and leaving us a 5-star review. Do the same on Spotify. And of course, don't forget to check out our Patreon. You can find a link to it on our Twitter or just look us up. This is Mallory Smart. Tune in next Saturday for my interview with Brianna Malotki. Thanks for listening to the show.